Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And we're back. This is the Masters of Modern. I am here, your host, Alex I Have a Plan Kessler, and joining me today is Ben the Soup Bateman.
Hey guys, how you doing? Welcome back,
Ben. So as you might notice, Glenn Jones is not here. He is now sojourned up to Seattle, Renton, Washington, and is now a Wizards employee. So he's going to be making all those sweet magic cards, and Ben is going to be joining me here for the interim, and we're going to be talking about the sweet magic cards.
Quick aside, we are going to be keeping a count of how many times we use the word sweet during this podcast, including what I just said and Alex's first reference. We are at 2. If you'd like to make it a drinking game, feel free. You'll be drunk.
So today's going to be kind of a little bit different. Normally what we do is we talk about a specific subject, and then afterwards we pick a certain deck to kind of deck tech. But today we're doing our entire episode on brewing. To do that, we're actually going to kind of do our deck tech while we're talking about it.
Excellent.
And so we're going to kind of start it off with kind of talking about the deck we want to talk about today, which is a sweet brew that you brought up a couple weeks ago and we've been working on. It kind of attacks the format that it currently exists with Delver running rampant in a unique way. Why don't you tell everyone about where we're starting?
Well, I started with one of my all-time favorite Magic cards, a card I like to call Grand Architect. And for those of you who don't know, that's such a lie. We started with a different card. We started with Chalice of the Void, because Chalice of the Void is actually a good card.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it shuts down so many of what the major decks in the format are trying to do right now.
Yeah, getting a Chalice down on one.
Oh, and for those who don't know, what Chalice of the Void is, it's a artifact. It costs XX, which means that, you know, you have to pay double mana for the effect you want. And it comes into play with X counters on it. Spells with a converted mana cost equal to how many counters are on Chalice of the Void get countered. So it basically, whatever mana you can get, if you can pay double the mana of what something would cost, it shuts down those spells for the rest of the game of that cost.
So 4 mana gets you 2, 6 mana gets you 3, etc., etc.
Right. 2 mana gets you 1, which is the important amount, because Delver is pretty much an entire deck of 1-drops.
So what we did is we decided that the best thing the deck would be able to do would be get a turn 1 Chalice of the Void on the play. So the initial idea was you play Simeon Spirit Guide and Chalice of the Void, and you can get a turn 1 Chalice. And from there, you just started to try to figure out what's good in the format, what's explosive, how well can you pair with this, which brings me to the next card, Grand Architect. The kind of idea for the deck is Chalice of the Void and Grand Architect, a deck that plays both of those cards and lots of big threats that Architect can kind of power out.
Right. This is a deck that, you know, it's kind of been there on the fringes. You know, Architect has always been a pet card of many brewers out there. And so the idea of the power that getting out a turn 3 or turn 4 Wurmcoil Engine or Batterskull, which are like two of the best possible cards you can have in the field early, is such a like an interesting attempt at doing something in Modern that isn't kind of going on right now, that, you know, people are very much looking into trying to do this in some way.
Because one of the biggest things we notice is that the first time I tried using Grand Architect in Modern, well, second or third time, but most recent time, was when Master of Waves was printed. And I had an interesting conversation at, I think I may have mentioned this last week, but I had an interesting conversation with Sam Black at, I think it was probably SCGLA, where I referenced that I had come up with this deck idea that I wanted to play a bunch of mono blue creatures, Grand Architect, and curve it into Master of Waves, which then I wanted to go crazy with Memnarch and try to go infinite. But he was like, I thought the same thing. I just posted a deck that doesn't do Memnarch or that. He's like, but you know, it does in fact play Grand Architect into Master of Waves, which I thought was really, really interesting. And I was like, well, you know, if Sam's doing it, then there's clearly, it can't be all bad. So
and previous on this podcast, you know, Master of Waves, we've talked about, is, and especially when we were doing the Merfolk episode, is very, very, very strong in this format, and is a card that's probably underplayed, and finding a unique way to kind of take that over, make it more powerful, and then do other powerful things. The fact that this deck on turn 4 is playing a Batterskull, a Wurmcoil Engine, or a Master of Waves, is a Master of Wave with Lords in play, so all of its creatures are way stronger than they normally would be, is a very, very strong place to possibly be. I mean, it's, and we'll get into kind of how to brew, and I want to kind of jump into that now. But it's doing powerful things, and when something is doing powerful things, that's a time to kind of look at and see, is this actually as good as it seems, or is this doing something different? So before we get completely into the deck, there are a few questions you should be asking yourself when brewing. And to kind of explain brewing, is you know, right now Modern has a few set decks that are already established. Brewing is kind of trying to take all the very large card pool of Modern, which is one of the interesting things about the format, and creating something new. This is something that happens a lot in Standard, where Standard rotates and you get to, or any real new format, where every time a rotation happens, or a new format starts to exist, that's when people start brewing heavily. Which is interesting about Modern is right now, actually, Modern is a complete format shift. There are now completely different decks that are dominating the format than there were 6 months ago. And so there are there's a possibility that strategies that weren't good in the era of Birthing Pod and Jund are much stronger now in the era of Delver and Ascendancy.
Which is sort of an interesting, that's sort of an interesting introduction into where do you start as a brewer and how do you attack the process as a format. Because essentially when you talk about a format shift like that, so historically in Modern, some of the biggest decks, I would say the biggest deck overall has been Jund for the longest time. And Jund added a few other things. At one point, Jund was playing white for Lingering Souls, and then it was playing a Johnny Vengeant. Then Jund shifted away when Blood Red Elf got banned. Then Junk got more popular. Now it's sort of more of a green-black. The bottom line is they're all mid-range decks that have played green and black at a bunch of value cards. So that sort of style of deck that's going to take advantage of discard spells and value creatures, it's not as good anymore. And when there's a massive
Jund's major advantage has always been, or the Rock deck's major advantage has always been, Thoughtseize you. It's Thoughtseize.
And Liliana. Empty your hand.
And because of Treasure Cruise, those cards are just not good anymore. Or at least they're heavily, heavily limited in how good they were.
Right.
And so that means that that's a format warping kind of playstyle that no longer is around. So the decks that Thoughtseize kind of hated out or Abrupt Decay hated out are now possible to rise to the top.
And one of the most interesting things to look at in any format is some styles of cards will always be good. So resilient threats have gotten so much stronger over the years in Magic. I mean, the power creep is obvious when you look at cards like Batterskull and Wurmcoil Engine. They're
so strong. I mean, we were talking about this earlier. There's really only one card in the entire Modern format that answers a Batterskull. Not a Batterskull.
A Wurmcoil Engine. And that's Path to Exile.
Right.
So
And that's not seeing as much play right now because Delver blue-red decks are, blue and red are much more prominent in the format. And they play Dismember, they play Lightning Bolt, but they're not, they play Gutshot even, but none of those things do anything to the Wurmcoil Engine. And since white has kind of fell to the wayside, Path is even less of a problem than normal.
I think I remember hearing a conversation, or maybe I was having a conversation with Eric Froelich or name drop, or Kibler, somebody, one of these tournaments, the last day. I think I referenced this last week. We were talking about fetch lands, and I asked Kibler what he thought the best card in Modern was, and he said Lightning Bolt. And he said, it's just hands down, it's the best card in Modern.
Right,
you should play it in every deck. It's good against everything. This is back in the days of before they banned the stupid elf, black-green Deathrite Shaman,
right.
And so obviously, when format changes happen and bans happen, cards get a little worse. But it is true that Lightning Bolt
got better with Deathrite Shaman going away because the life game was less permanent. I mean, it can't kill Deathrite Shaman, but
right. People
are also not gaining 2 life every turn.
True.
To kind of lock, make it so Snapcaster Bolt isn't a plan.
So something that comes to mind with Deathrite Shaman, and this is sort of just something I want to identify very quickly because we're referencing Grand Architect, is I think it's really interesting. We talked last week about Ascendancy
right. And
about how those three abilities got sort of stapled together.
Mm-hmm.
And you looked at them and you almost could read, you're like, which is the last one they added?
Right.
Well, one of my favorite types of Magic cards it always are efficiently costed cards that do too many things. Because I'm not from a design point, but they're just, as a brewer, you look at a card like Grand Architect and you say, okay, it's mono blue, it costs 3. It's not only some weird, unique effect, but it's a lord, as well as the fact that it can turn creatures blue. I mean,
which is probably its least important ability, but the fact that it's a ramp card, it's kind of very similar to Deathrite. I mean, it's cost 3, which is a completely different world.
Yeah.
But it is a mana elf, for all intents and purposes, and it also is a lord. So that's two effects that don't really go together, but allow you to do very... It's a versatile card, and that's what we're kind of getting at.
And it's scalable, though, which is interesting, right? Because in the way the Deathrite Shaman's never going to accelerate you by more than one mana, this card, if you play something on turn two, a blue creature on turn two... For those of you that don't know what Grand Architect does, by the way, it's a 1/3 creature for two blue and a colorless that blue creatures get +1/+1. It has an ability that states, tap an untapped blue creature you control, add two colorless to your mana pool only to be used for artifact spells or activated abilities, and for one blue, you can tap to turn target artifact creature blue.
Right. So it allows it to make your artifact creatures into blue creatures, which then get affected by the lore ability. It also allows them to now net you a mana. So you make one creature blue, and you get two colorless mana out of that blue creature, also ramping yourself. But before we get more into the deck, I do want to get into, like, questions you should ask yourself when brewing, because, you know, there are other decks you might want to brew. We've talked about in the past that, you know, I've done Glittering Wish into Sovereign's Lost Alara brews. You had your Handsome Horror deck back in the day. You know, the first question you have to ask, what are you trying to accomplish? And in reference to this, what you're trying to accomplish is in a versatile way, either get a early Chalice out or start pumping out giant threats that are impossible to handle. You know, is it a bad version of what other decks are already doing? Is probably the question that people ask themselves the least when brewing. And I think it's something that is really something that needs to be taken into consideration. It is possible that the deck we're talking about today is just a worse Tron.
It's very possible. And when you look at, you know, top to bottom to top, inside out, all these phrases that people like to use when discussing deck building and designing a deck, you know, you can attack it from all different ways. One of the questions that you ask yourself is going to be, what's the best mana in the format, or what's the best acceleration in the format? Tron, in general, has been the best acceleration in the format.
At least since Glimmer Post and all that deck got banned out of the format.
If you want to get to 7 mana on turn 3, you play Tron. That gets you Karn Liberated on turn 3. This is a little different. The threat base is a little bit more versatile, and it's trying to do something else. It's just trying to do something that's a little bit more explosive than Tron, but it doesn't have Tron's late game.
But I think the way, if this deck is not just a worse version of Tron, the key cards that kind of allow that to happen are the versatility of a possible Tesserator sideboard plan, where, you know, the nice thing about mono blue artifact decks is there are multiple cards, Tezzeret being the key card in this, that allow you to kind of create a toolbox sideboard, similar to what Ascendancy does with Glittering Wish, where, you know, you have, there are very good specific artifact answers to many different decks, and you can only play one of them and then just side in a bunch of Tezzerets, which lets you tutor your deck and put them into play.
For the record, Tezzeret is one of the more underused planeswalkers. It's if you don't know what it does, it's 2 blue, 3 colorless for a planeswalker that comes down with 4 loyalty. It has, I believe, 3 abilities, only one of which...
Well, okay, so it's +1 is untap 2 artifacts, which is not normally super relevant, though in this deck what it'll generally be used for is either a semi-ramp spell, allowing you to untap cards that generate mana, or... more important, or not less important, but more often, is probably giving just like stuff like Wurmcoil Engine Vigilance.
Yes, and then the ability that is always the ability that a brewer looks at Tezzeret for is the tutor ability.
Right, the more relevant one, which is, you know, it comes with 4 loyalty, it can minus X to search for whatever X is, a equal converted mana cost artifact, and put it into play.
Yeah, so essentially it just allows you to get... pretty much other than Batterskull and Wurmcoil Engine, which would be the biggest threats in the deck, it allows you to get every other card in the entire deck, plus an entire slew of sideboard cards that we could use.
That's one of the things I think is a benefit of the strategy, is that Tezzeret is a different line of attack that's completely different than what Tron's trying to do. The other one is Master of Waves.
That's very interesting, and that's probably when we looked at this list in the first place. Master of Waves is the card that I think we were discussing with Glenn last week.
Or a few weeks ago. Or in last week.
Whatever it was. We all agreed, sort of, first of all, it's 4 mana, so it's resilient to Abrupt Decay. It's pro-red, so even if you don't, protection from red, so even if you don't have a Chalice down, it can't be bolted.
Can't be bolted, and it can't be gut-shotted. Most of Delver's removal suite, all of Delver's removal suite is red.
And that's why, I'm sure most of you caught this already, but the reason that you want to curve Architect into Master of Waves is because even if they get rid of the Master, the tokens, the 1-0 tokens, stay alive because of Architect's Blue Lord ability.
Not to mention, you know, okay, so if the curve is 2 drop into Master, or into Architect, into Master of Waves, you now get 4 3-2s or 5 3-2s, including Master of Waves, on the board.
That you can immediately tap due to Architect's ability, not requiring Summoning Sickness to play one. Yes, it's very explosive. You can empty your hand and have a huge turn.
The other interesting thing is, you know, that turn is even, you know, most decks have a weakness to board wipes when you just play out your hand. Wurmcoil Engine allows you to kind of not have that weakness.
And so does Batterskull. And that's the amazing thing about when you look at the whole Architect mana thing and how sort of unique of an ability that is, the fact that blue creatures that are played that turn can be activated for the ability without Summoning Sickness being an issue allows you to do all kinds of crazy things like returning your Batterskull to your hand, replaying your Batterskull. You just get degenerate amounts of mana to interact with these abilities in a way that... That's something Tron needs a very specific set of lands to be able to do. Very few other decks have a card as explosive as Grand Architect if used correctly. And I realize we continue to refer to this card like it's some just beat you over the head power level card. It's not. It's right, just in the right, context right. of what
well,
we're talking
so that
about.
Gets me actually to the next point. So one of the reasons Grand Architect in the past has not been and super like has not really found a home and it hasn't really done well and a question you should always ask yourself when brewing decks is this deck consistent? What is the consistency of what you're trying to do? And, you know, there are many decks, like if you look at kind of Travis Wu is kind of really famous for this. He is famous for coming out with like crazy deck ideas and he posts them to Modo. The problem with most of his decks are consistency issues.
Right.
Like sometimes they do just crazy powerful things. Like he has a Narset deck right now that he's champion with Gore's Vengeance that like, when it does the correct plan, it gets Omniscience into play turn two, and it just, like, is doing insane things.
Right.
But it only does that one out of X amount of games, and it makes it, like, can you win with that in that way 10 times in a tournament? More than that? Really, you need to do it 20 times in a tournament in a single day? No. And this deck had that problem for a while. When Grand Architect was really the only card that'll kind of allow you to do your thing, and even with Grand Architect and Ethereum Sculptor, which Ethereum Sculptor is a blue and a colorless 1/2 artifact creature that all artifact spells cost one less. So it's kind of an Electromancer from Storm decks for artifact decks. And, you know, that's 8 of this kind of similar spell, but it ended up normally being just a little too short and a little too non-resilient. But I think that recently in M15, the card Chief Engineer was printed. I think that actually helped a lot with the consistency problem this deck has.
Getting up to 5, 6, 7, or 8 copies of a 2-drop that interact favorably with Architect on turn 3 is an important effect.
Right. I mean, like, the deck was missing 2 effects. It needed a turn 2 blue drop so that Architect kind of curved correctly so it can start casting for, like, tapping for 4 mana. And it also needed another card that if you didn't draw Architect, it kind of did its job. And, you know, Chief Engineer, which gives all artifacts Convoke, kind of accomplishes this goal in, you know, it's not necessarily the strongest of these 3. I would say it's the weakest of the 3, you know, mana cheating artifact reduction spells. But I also think that, you know, that's not necessarily that bad, and it does other things that are really strong. It being a 1/3 can block Goblin Guide all day, and that's great.
Right, so, no, like, absolutely.
There are things that it does that are strong, and, it, you know, you're only playing, you know, I wouldn't recommend maybe playing the whole 4/4, so you're not playing all 12, but having that consistency really helps. You know, consistency is one of the things that often people kind of fail to notice. They're like, oh, look what this does. This deck does sweet things if everything goes right when I goldfish 1,000 times on an app. But when you're actually playing in a tournament, you know, you just don't win 2 out of 3 games, and that's losing
your matches. Right, absolutely.
The next question one should generally ask themselves when brewing is, does this deck randomly get hated out by cards that are good against already established decks?
This is an important one to pay attention to because there's 100 cards you could look at and you could say, this card is good against X, Y, and Z.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of good Magic cards that are being underplayed. The question you have to start to ask yourself is like, just because Grand Architect's a good card in general, or a better example would be, I had this deck that I took to a Grand Prix last year that we called Hunted Handsome. It was like a deck that played the hunted creatures from Ravnica. They're essentially undercosted threats that give your opponent a bunch of creature tokens.
Better threats almost.
And this was before they changed the legend rule. So what would happen is that the idea with the deck was that you would get a Leyline of Singularity, which makes all permanents legendary, and you would play one of these threats, the best of which is a 7/7 trample black creature for 2 mana. Now, in the games that it worked and on the play, I would get a Ley Line of Singularity in my 7-7. Your 2-3-3 tokens would cancel each other out. That was amazing. Here's the problem. At the time, every single deck was playing Path to Exile. So I would say to myself constantly, this is a bad matchup, this is a bad matchup, because my 7-7 amazing draw would just get Path to Exile every game. It's a fine strategy, but it's bad against the field. Cards that people are already going to be playing.
Artifact removal, classically, because a lot of the Tezzerator decks focus a little too much heavily on Artifact, and Artifact removal is something that at least used to be played a lot because Affinity is a deck in the format.
Right.
Affinity has lowered. I think Affinity is not as good as it used to be. I think it's not one of the decks that got as hurt as other decks in the new format because it is a quick and semi-resilient deck. But, like, there is more Electrolyze effects being played. Gutshot is now a main deck card in a lot of decks. Delver, you know, can kind of tempo Affinity out or race them. Lightning Bolt and Snapcaster Mage is now half the field, which is a bad matchup for Affinity. So there is that issue. So Affinity may not be as relevant, and that means Artifact hate is less relevant. This deck also is not as weak to Artifact hate or Tutor hate that says something like Tron is bad against. So this, like, there are other decks that kind of, when we're going back to the kind of the previous point that, like, is this a worst version of something? It dodges the hate that Tron gets hit by because it's not tutoring things out from your deck.
Right.
It's not, the main threats that are artifacts are all pretty removal resistant. Batterskull, if you play it and you still have some mana untapped, you can save the Batterskull. You know, Wormcoil Engine gives you 2/3/3s when it dies. So even that's not very, you know, graveyard hate problematic. And all of your major other threats, Master, you know, Architect is an artifact. Master Waves is an artifact. So, like, this deck's kind of game plan B is non-artifact based. And the artifacts that it does have in its game plan A are all pretty removal resistant.
Yeah, it definitely is a deck that seems to be focused on either getting a Chalice of the Void on turn one or getting so turboed out by turn three. This deck sort of wants to slow the opponent down enough in the early turns with Disruption in Chalice, or take over with such an explosive turn three or four that the whole kind of point of the deck is to have this massively explosive turn three or four. So by turn five, you should have overwhelmed them with threats that are very removal resistant, and in theory you've gotten a Chalice down. You've either spent the first turn or two playing Chalice, or you've spent the first turn or two setting up Wormcoil Engines and Batterskulls.
Now, the last question, and I think this is a thing that both me and Ben have been criminally guilty of in the past, is, and the Hunted Horror deck that he described previously, I think, is a prime example of this, is the question you should ask yourself when brewing last is, have I gotten too deep? Is this deck...
Yes, 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 always yes.
Have I convinced myself, for some reason, that all these other things are not true, and this deck passes these tests, but I've really just gone in such a deep way that this deck really doesn't do anything, and it's really just not a deck that functions correctly.
You need to ask yourself two questions. One, have I gotten too deep? Two, is it sweet?
So, be wary that often you can convince yourself without actually testing. I think that's the last really piece of information, is the key to brew is testing. You know, you can theoretically do whatever you want building a deck, and you can build anything, but if you're not going to actually play it against the field and see if it works, it isn't going to be, you know, a true brew. You haven't actually successfully done anything because you don't know if it works.
True. You do have to just coming up with brews. I'm right. I'm guilty of that all the time, is coming up with ideas and then getting lazy and not actually building them in real life.
Right. Just I goldfish them on my phone 100 times. Oh, this seems sweet. You don't notice that, like, you're goldfishing two out of the three games. Like, you just like, oh, that hand's terrible, I'll just go take another seven.
Yeah, right.
Or, like, you know, you even just, like, theoretically, oh, this all works. Okay, great. I won't test it against anything. I'll bring it to, a major tournament and be like, oh, wait, this doesn't work at all. Why am I doing this?
Right.
So now that we've kind of gone over the questions you should ask yourself when building, I kind of want to go over where to kind of, like, good places to start. So,
Fair.
Now that we've kind of gone through the processes you should think about when you're coming up with a deck, there are, I think we have four origination places where decks can come from. I have them listed as the whole, the good, the new, and the forgotten. A whole, which is kind of, and I think actually the deck we're talking about today kind of fulfills a lot of these different categories. A hole in the format. So the first one is, you know, there is a weakness that a lot of the decks have the format right now that are not being exploited, and they don't know that's a weakness they have.
And that weakness, from what we can understand, is between Delver, Ascendancy, and many of the other decks in Modern, yep. everybody seems very, very reliant on one drops.
Right.
And the one drop choice removal spells that people are using are Lightning Bolt and Path to Exile. But especially if the most explosive deck in the format is Ascendancy.
Well, it's not even that. I mean, like, Delver of Secrets is a one drop. Gitaxian Probe, like, the format is now filled with cantrips, all of which are one-drops. Or removal spells, or burn spells, which are also all one-drops. And most of the creatures' threats in the format are one-drops. Like, if you really look at Burn, Delver, even Blue, White, Red, and Ascendancy, all of these decks are filled with one-drop creatures, or one-drop removal spells, or one-drop cantrips.
And another, yeah. So I totally agree that if you look at that and you say, okay, that's a big one. And then the other one is that Lightning Bolt is so heavily played right now that even aside from it being a one drop, what are some things that do take huge advantage of being to withstand three damage?
Right.
What are some threats that are going to get around that or the protection of red or something? Right. Like that?
So, you know, Chalice on one, that's the hole. That's where we started. That, you know, we asked ourselves, you know, is there a hole in the format? There seems to be one. What's a good card that takes advantage of that? And that is one of them. The second factor is that almost every single threat that's important in this deck, that once it's landed on the field, you're going to win, are Lightning Bolt resistant. Now, not all of them are. Architect is not. Your Mana Ramp dudes are not. But, you know, your Mana Ramp dudes are not that much weaker than the other Mana Ramp dudes in the format to Lightning Bolt. So, like, yes, that's a weakness, but it's a weakness decks have kind of survived through the past. And you have the redundancy of having 10 to 12 of the artifact creature effects that you kind of can maybe get around the Lightning Bolt at first. Not to mention your Chalice could be shutting Lightning Bolt off in the beginning in the first place.
As well as the fact that, like we mentioned already, one of the biggest things about Architect that's different than, say, a Birds of Paradise is when Architect comes down, you get to say, maintain priority,
yeah.
and use the ability if you want to. You can right. cast something else with it. You get that 2-mana effect out of Architect, even if they're going to Lightning Bolt the guy out of the game.
Right. You get still get the instant value right there. And the last part is the bigger threats you're cheating into play are all resistant to Lightning Bolt. You know, like, Tezzeret finds you a creature immediately if you maintain a priority, you know, or finds you another artifact. Wormcoil Engine is a 6-6. Batterskull is a 4-4. Master Waves has protection from red. So, like, Lightning Bolt gets kind of hated out by all of your major threats, and all of you, and Chalice also hates out Lightning Bolt to start with from the beginning. So that kind of describes, you know, is there a hole in the format? You know, the format currently is weak to cards that are good against Lightning Bolt and also cards that hate on one drops. The next category, and a good place to start, one thinking of ways to build a deck. And I think this is actually where 99% of deck building happens, at least 50% at the minimum, where, like, it's 50 this and then 50, oh, these are cards are sweet. Let's do something sweet with them, is the good. And this is literally just, these are good cards. Do they work well enough together in a way that is not currently seeing play? And does it attack, you know, are they just a good, like, generally mid-range decks are what this is. Jen kind of started here, which is like, well, red, black, green kind of all have a bunch of good cards in them. Let's put them all together and see how they work. Oh, Lightning Bolt of Breath Decay work well together. Oh, Bloodbraid Elf works great with those guys. Bob and Tarmogoyf do good things together. So, like, that's kind of what Jund was, and that's where most mid-range decks kind of start from. A standard is kind of ripe with the good starting points for deck building. And, you know, I've done this before. A lot of times I'll look at, like, okay, so black, white, red is a color combination that isn't seeing play. What kind of does this deck combination offer, and is it good enough to kind of get there? Now, Architect kind of does that, where, you know, there are cards we haven't talked about that are just good cards that we're seeing play. And an example of this is Master Waves that we've talked about already. Master Waves is just a good card that, right. like, on the field by itself, if you play Master Wave, it already gains you some value and it's resistant to the format. On top of that, you know, something we haven't talked about that this deck plays two of is Vedalken Shackles.
Vedalken
Shackle, we talked about last week, did very well at Pro Tour Born of the Gods
right.
in Blood Moon, and it's an underplayed card in the format because most decks aren't able to play the large amount of islands you need to kind of make that card work. This deck is mono blue. It currently is playing mostly islands. I think currently in our list we have around 18, and it might go down to 16. But, you know, that card is great against Delver. It's great against Burn. It's great against Twin. Like, the cards you can kind of steal mostly you're just going to be able to win by doing that. And it kind of offers a new threat and a new engine that's very resilient to kind of the cards we've already talked about that this deck could be weak to.
Yeah, one other thing to point out, when you reference that deck from Pro Tour, Blue Moon it was called.
Yeah.
That was another one of the big inspiration points for this deck in my mind when I was starting to think, okay, if they get away with it, if they can play Mono Blue with Blood Moon in it, well, all we're doing is playing Chalice instead. But that doesn't mean we can't just change it to play Blood Moon as well, because right. Blood Moon's still really good.
Blood Moon's completely an option out of the sideboard for this deck.
And if you're going to possibly Spirit Guides, the same concept as powering out a Blood Moon on turn two when you play an Elf on turn one. I played right. Moon Zoo at one point, which was a strong deck, and this can kind of do the same thing.
The one reason I think that the Moon plan, the Moon part of Blood Moon, the Moon plan of Blue Moon isn't as strong right now, and the reason I like Vidalkin Shackles more is I actually don't think, other than Ascendancy, which is not showing up as strongly as people kind of expected ahead of time, most of the decks in the format aren't that weak to them as they used to be. You know, Delver isn't very weak to Blood Moon at all.
No.
And especially if they, like, think you're on the Blood Moon plan, or maybe you'll get game two out of it, but really they're going to be able to survive a Blood Moon.
Twin survives it just fine.
You hate out Scapeshift decks, but I actually think this deck is not that weak to Scapeshift because you gain so much life. On turn three, you start getting a ton of life, and that's kind of a problem Scapeshift can't deal with.
Right.
And your sideboard options are also, you have, like, because you're mono blue mana base, you also get to use Tectonic Edge, which is great against Scapeshift.
Very good, yeah.
And so, like, more to the point, is you're using cards that are good, and Blood Moon isn't that good in the format, but the other cards that from that deck are all still kind of relevant. Specifically, the one I was talking about is Vidalkin Shackles, which fits right in the plan. You can tutor it with Tezzeret. You know, if you draw two of them, you can discard Thirst for Knowledge. If you don't want to just start running two of them out, you can get it into play turn two, turn three. You can, you know, ramp it into play with the artifact lords that we've talked about. So it does a lot of powerful things. And, you know, this, as we were saying before, a good place to start, mid-range decks have always been good in this format. And part of the reason is, like, if you have enough powerful spells that are just powerful on their own, like a topped decked, if they, like, somehow deal with everything you have and you're, like, at 5 mana and you top deck Vidalkin Shackles,
oh yeah,
you're in a great place.
Sure.
If you top deck Battleskull, you're in a great, like, these are cards that are just good by themselves that then also get powered out of stuff.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the things to look at here is that if you talk about good stuff decks, right, this is always the complaint when I would say most brewers run into the problem of just sort of laying out their pile of cards and comparing it to a pile of good cards from a deck that has actually won things.
Yeah.
And they say, pound for pound, 40% of my cards are just bad versions or worse than their cards.
Right.
And that is the case in this deck, I'll be honest. From what we have so far, the mana creatures, the Architect, et cetera, those guys, they're pretty bad late game draws. They aren't good. However, you can say that it's sort of one of these things. These decks always exist in this weird medium space of being almost combo-y. They're almost mid-range.
Well, I think you have in the deck, I think you have six cards that are just dead top decks. Maybe if you include Phyrexian Metamorph, but really six cards. And those are the Ethereum Sculptors and the Chief Engineers.
And Spirit Guys if we go that direction.
You know, Phyrexian Metamorph is decent because you can copy what they're doing. So worst case scenario, you just start getting on par with them. But, you know, Grand Architect, yes, isn't that strong, but it also is the Lord ability.
Yeah.
Like, which, like, you know, if you're just not doing anything, it comes into play and starts actually affecting what needs to happen. And it's a threat they have to answer, otherwise they can start losing to Batterskulls and whatever else
comes out of the field.
Or, like, even that into a, you know, as we mentioned, Master Waves is a problem. But that is the, you know, like, Jund is a classic good stuff deck. Junk is a classic good stuff deck. These are decks that are just like, we're playing the best cards. Deal with it. Delver, to be totally honest, is kind of almost just a good stuff deck with a, you know, a different focus. Where it's instead of, I'm playing good creatures and removal, I'm playing a couple good creatures and great spells that work with those creatures.
So, good stuff decks. Does it have strengths over other strategies? And are these cards really that good? We sort of just answered, are these cards really that good? That is sort of what we're talking about. Some of them are that good. The obviously good cards are good. Some of the others are really not that good. The big thing when it says, does this have strengths over the strategies, is this concept of spirit guiding into chalices, et cetera, et cetera. This was a deck called Dragon Stompy from Legacy. This was an actual deck that people with Trinispheres. And we could be playing Trinisphere in this format, but I don't think it's good here. Somebody tried porting this over a year or two ago in Modern, I seem to remember, with Blood Moons, Magus the Moons. I don't know if this version played Trinisphere, Spirit Guides. The problem is that in Legacy, you get City of Traitors and Ancient Tomb, which is how you can so consistently get a Trinisphere out.
Right.
And Lotus Petals. You can get it out on turn one almost every game.
The other issue is that Modern, until very recently, has not been a 1, 2, and 3 drop format.
Yeah, this is
or
true.
Or 1 and 2, at least a 1 and 2 drop format, where, you know, in Legacy, most of the cards do not cost more than 2. Or at least it used to be the case. Now, in Modern, you know, that's true. Most spells are 1 and 2 drops right now. Maybe 3 drops, other than Treasure Cruise, which is arguably also a 1 drop.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, you know, the weakness didn't exist until recently. The other thing is, you know, sometimes like there are other decks that are very powerful, and synergy is important. And yes, the cards that we have that are bad aren't great, but, you know, they synergize very well with what the other parts of the deck are trying to do. And are they that much worse with Chalice than Birds of Paradise?
That's interesting.
Especially in a monocolor. Like, mana fixing is not what we're looking for these things to do. It's more ramping. And, right. You know, because we're trying to play Chalice, we can't play the good ones, the 1-drop mana elves. But the 2-drop ones that also have, like, very unique effects, these function differently than a bird.
Right.
Most of these can net more than 1 mana. You know, with Aetherium Sculptor, every artifact, you're netting a mana. So you can play 3 artifacts in a turn, and each one, that's 3 mana that this generated. You know, Chief Engineer, all of your creatures are now Birds of Paradise.
That's a really interesting way of putting it when you talk about thinking outside the box, and you talk about, like we said, what's the best, fastest mana, right? If Birds of Paradise is the best mana creature, I guess Deathrite Shaman maybe is better, but in terms of those, if that's the standard, is a 1-drop that accelerates you into 3 on 2, well, how can you mitigate the loss of your mana creatures being 2-drops? You shut 1-drops out of the game.
Right.
That's what you do. Right. And that's why
you shut 1-drops out of the game, or, you know, we're netting more mana than a Bird of Paradise. So, like,
right.
You know, not necessarily, we're not going 1 to 3. We're going 2 to 4 or 2 to 6. That's what becomes strong. And you know, these aren't necessarily, like, they're not strictly worse than Birds of Paradise because they go wide. All these cards, you know, generate a ton of mana in a wide way versus Birds of Paradise that generates a ton of mana quickly in a singular way.
Yeah, I mean, not even a ton, just
yeah, yeah. One mana. So the next place to start brewing from ways to brew is the new. So this is kind of, I think, the other most common one is, you know, a new card has been created.
Right.
A new, you know, new set comes out, a new card is unbanned, and let's start from there. You know, a prime example of that is what happened in this format. Right now, Delver and Ascendancy are 2 decks that didn't exist. Or, well, Delver existed but wasn't as strong as it was now. And new cards accomplished this. You know, Ascendancy combo came out. There are kind of 2 ways this happens. One of them is a new engine card. And so Jeskai Ascendancy is that, where
yep.
A new card that does something so unique that, like, an entire deck can be built around it and so powerful that it, like, functions, creates an entire new deck. And that's what Ascendancy kind of accomplished. That's what Birthing Pod did when it first came out. That's what Ascendancy is doing. You know, these are kind of cards that allow a new deck to sort of be created.
Hmm.
And then the second way is new consistencies, which I would argue is what Delver got. I think Treasure Cruise allowed Delver to become, and Treasure Cruise and the Prowess 1-drop.
Banner, whatever. It's haste and it has Prowess as a 1-2.
Those cards allowed Delver to be much more consistent and play much more of a game of just a bunch of spells and a few, like, you know, 12 threats and a bunch of spells and just, like, card draw and be able to get there, made Delver much more stronger because of new consistencies. I think, as I mentioned earlier, this deck kind of gained that advantage as well, the Aetherium Sculptor deck.
Yeah.
Because of
Chief Engineer,
and because of Master of Waves over the last year, it's been given 2 major threats that, you know, A, Master of Waves applies pressure in a new way that still goes with the game plan, and Engineer allows, you know, just that one more step above in the amount of mana dorks that you have
right.
that are accomplishing kind of what you need to accomplish.
Now you get to the last bit of this starting to brew. And right. This is
the places to start when looking to brew a new deck.
So starting from the Forgotten. The Forgotten is what we're going to call this. And does a new card make an older strategy stronger?
It, you know, these are like new cards being printed that make, you know, Forgotten strategies stronger.
Sure.
Another example, you know, is an older strategy misbuilt and has potential to get stronger? Does a strategy that, like, you know, has been around, like, I would argue that Goro's Vengeance could be this deck where there maybe isn't just, no one's come up with the best version of it yet.
Sure.
And we're just kind of waiting to see if someone can actually break the card. I think that Birthing Pod actually took a while for this to be accomplished. I think, like, the first year and a half or 2 years of Modern, Birthing Pod wasn't built correctly. I think, like, eventually they got to the right point. But, you know, there even Jund had this problem where, like, Jund was playing, like, I remember the first Pro Tour for Modern, the question with Jund was, do we play four Kitchen Finks or do we play four Garrosh Messengers?
Yeah, I remember
and, like,
that.
And, like, which one's better? And is it a toss-up? And, like, now Jund doesn't play either of them and no one's even thinking about it.
The deck for me that I always remember watching the evolution of that is the most mind-boggling is in Standard. So when Delver rose to prominence in Standard and it got to that oppressive point where it was the post-Cobblade blue deck and it was back, like, when it ended up with the Vapor Snags and the Resto Angels in the end. But the original version of the deck, do you remember how it started? It was the
spirit,
most...
Mono Blue Spirits or something like that?
Illusions.
Yeah. Illusions,
Phantasmal
yeah, yeah.
Bear, Lord of the Unreal, Phantasmal Dragon. It was playing... I mean, it was terrible. Like,
right.
It was like... Right. But somebody was like, we're going to play this blue kind of Lords, kind of weird, janky... Phantasmal Image, I think, was in there. And then somebody was like, okay, well, what if we cut some of these and we play Delvers? We'll add four Delvers. This card seems fine. You know, it got printed.
Right.
And then, oh, well, I guess Vapor Snag is okay. And then, oh, Snapcaster Mage was really good.
Ponder's in the format, so we should play that because that'll allow us to, you know, make sure Delver flips on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Oh, Geist of St. Traft is here. Okay, we should probably
put,
you know, that lets us get white. And, oh, wait, well, Restoration Angel just got printed. That seems really good.
It seems reasonable.
And we have Mana Leak.
It's bizarre when you watch decks develop in that way and that built correctly theory.
Right. And so, like, if you're starting to kind of... If you're jumping into the brew game, if you're thinking of maybe brewing a deck, looking at old lists, old decks that kind of have fallen out of favor is a place to kind of maybe start. The other reason this kind of happens is, like, you know, formats change. So, you know, what was good 3 years ago is probably not good right now, or wasn't good, you know, and then became out of favor. Now that the format, especially right now, has shifted so drastically, it could maybe come back. It could be a format that is now more resilient to what's going on than what used to be going on.
Well, and to be totally fair, I just want to point. So, like, anybody who knows me and knows and plays Magic with me, and you hear about some of the ideas for decks I have and the cards I love to play, you can that question, "Am I going too deep?" Yes, that is fine to ask yourself. And the thing is this, though: don't ever let cynical, competitive Magic personalities convince you that your ideas are bad just by, like, rolling their eyes at your idea. Because I will tell you. You, if you think outside the box, you will come up with unique ideas that will catch people by surprise more often than you think. I took that Hunted Horror deck to a PTQ, and I believe I went 4-2-1 or 5-3 with it on the play against competitive Tier 1 decks. I mean, again, I was sitting there, and I would play it against Tron, and if they didn't have a Path to Exile, I have a 7-7, and you have one mana. And you just win by turn 3. They just have a way to answer you. So you... Look at Travis Wu. Look at the strategy.
Connolly Woods, Travis Wu, Patrick Chapin. These are guys that are famous for brewing decks. And, you know, Travis Wu is probably, and Patrick Chapin are probably the two extremes of brewing, where Patrick Chapin generally goes for much more obvious strategies that are more correct in how they're being brewed, while Travis Wu goes for crazy, out of the box, let me try killing someone in the most ridiculous possible way, more than even consistency.
Don't ever let yourself get stifled just by the fact that you think you're being too silly or some competitive Magic player.
And I think actually the bigger mistake that happens with brewing decks is much more often the fact that people don't test. I think really the biggest lesson that anyone can learn is testing is important. I mean, Wizards even says this when they come down to designing cards, is you can only get so far with theory, and you always just have to put, like, just do the work and start playing the deck, even if you have to proxy it, maybe not buy all the cards, and just start playing against your opponent and see, does this deck work? is this deck good against blue-red Delver? Does this deck have a game against Scapeshift? Does this deck work in the format? Because if it doesn't, then that's fine. You know, like, the best thing that could happen is you learning from the mistakes and moving on to the next deck. If it's great, if it actually starts doing something, maybe you have something there and you should maybe apply more pressure and figure out if this is the way you kind of want to make this deck work.
Agreed. So the last thing we want to get to is I mean, we have talked sort of during this process almost at length about this deck already.
Right. So, you know, as always, we want to do a gauntlet with the deck tech. So since we're doing the deck tech today on the deck we've been talking about this entire time, it's kind of been a giant deck tech.
And what we should do just really quickly sort of to recap exactly what this deck wants to do. This is sort of the general gist of it. If you're going to play the version with Simeon's...
game plans.
Yeah, if you're going to play the version with Simeon's Spirit Guide... and a couple gemstone caverns in it. The idea is you can get out a Chalice of the Void on one mana on turn one before your opponent has done anything, shutting off many of their strategies. That is game plan A if you have Simeon Spirit Guide in the deck.
Right.
If not, you're going to get it out on turn two for one mana, which is still decent, but they may have landed a threat or be holding a counterspell or played a Delver right. or something. The middle game plan is getting curving basically an Ethereum Sculptor into a Grand Architect and tapping the two of them that turn to play a Batterskull. Right. So a turn three Batterskull.
Game plan A is using the disruptive effect of...
Chalice of the Void,
sorry. Game plan A is using the disruptive effect of Chalice of the Void to kind of slow them down so you can just play the spells that you have that are good. Game plan B is just using your Architects and your other mana dorks to pump out giant artifact creatures that are hard for them to deal with. And I would say game plan C is chaining an Architect into Master of Waves or similar effects where you're going wide and using the Lord effect to kind of attack from a different angle.
And one thing we haven't pointed out here is that if you are going to play all 10, so two copies of Engineer, four Architects, and four Ethereum Sculptors, one card we didn't mention that we're toying around with that I think we both like a lot is Hall of Triumph, which is three mana, and it's an artifact that states, choose a color, all creatures of this color get +1/+1. And it turns your 10 mana lord guys into...
legitimate threats. So when he first mentioned this card specifically, I thought it probably was the pet card and the card that maybe seemed a little loose. But after actually testing with the deck, the fact that it A, makes your Master of Ethereum tokens just another thing that... First, A, keeps them around if they deal with Master. And B, just...
Master of Waves tokens.
Master of Waves, sorry. And also just is a insurmountable force, like, those things are huge at that point, is really strong. And it also makes all of these 1/3s and 1/2s into at least legitimate things that can attack.
Well, because just what you realize, I mean, it's pretty obvious when you think about the fact that Grand Architect makes your Master of Waves playable as a threat beyond just a 2/1 pro red creature, because the tokens stick around if they kill Master.
Right.
Hall of Triumph does the same thing, and because Ethereum Sculptor is in the deck, reducing the cost greatly, and I mean, anybody who played Architect back in Standard, or obviously there's a number of Phyrexian Metamorphs in this list because they're a blue card, then that's an artifact that also can be a blue creature. It's good on every level. As soon as you have multiple Ethereum Sculptors, that Hall of Triumph can just come down for free half the time.
Well, yeah, the game plan that I was surprised was in the deck is, you know, playing Ethereum Sculptor of Chief Engineer and then using those cards to, and then copying them with the Metamorph for a reduced amount. And every Metamorph from that point on is cheaper. And then once those are all in play, Hall of Triumph can come in for free and just make all of those, like, an army of three or two drop, you know, two attacking creatures that's much stronger than I expected it to be.
And because Batterskull and Wurmcoil Engine, that's the difference. The obvious difference between Ethereum Sculptor and Grand Architect is that Architect requires you to tap all of your creatures to utilize their mana for these big threats. Once you have multiple sculptors in play,
everything's free.
you can be attacking with all your 2/3 and 2/4 blue creatures and just tapping like two mana to play a Batterskull or something like that. It's like all of a sudden when you can be playing 4/4 lifelink guys for two mana and three mana for Wurmcoil Engines, the deck is just crazy explosive.
Right. A few other cute things that the deck does before we move into the, you know, into the actual gauntlet. So, you know, as we mentioned, there is a Tezzeret plan built in. The deck right now is running two main and two in the side.
Alex's version.
My version. <She's good. laughs> things that are important to that is, A, it can cheat in the Hall of Triumph. B, we're playing a singleton, or 1/2 Mirror Superions, which is a 2-drop artifact creature that's a 5/6 that can only be cast using mana not from lands. So
Only creature generated mana.
Is it only creature generated mana?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a Mere Superion is a 2-drop 5/6 artifact creature that can only be put into play using, or can only be cast using creature mana produced by creatures. We have a plan. You know, you can use either a combination of Chief Engineer, Ethereum Sculptor, Grand Architect to just get into play. Yep. That works really fine. And a 5/6 is nothing to laugh at. The other side, you know, and you don't want to play too many of them because if you draw them and not those things, they're just dead cards.
Yep.
But with Tezzeret, he's another card you can cheat into play. Tezzeret, playing a 5-drop, playing Tezzeret and then cheating in a Mere Superion and then keeping Tezzeret still on the board and putting a 5/6 to play is a very strong play. And so it offers another, like this is the threat that Tezzeret brings in, while that also offers you the level of all of these, you know, singleton, disruptive cards that you can also side in that are artifacts that Tezzeret also can search up. And we mentioned Vidalkin Shackles. I think beyond just Chalice and Vidalkin Shackles, the other card I think it would be good for disruption is Dismember, because it goes around the Chalice. It's, you know, just a straight-up removal spell. Sometimes it's important to have something that can answer threats.
And you have so much life gain that the life loss is mitigated.
Right, exactly. So I think it's something that, you know, is a card that is something that should be considered and something to be played. Land-wise, you know, we've been talking about Simeon Spirit Guide, and a card that has come up is Gemstone Mind.
So,
Gemstone Caverns. This card... Well, why don't you explain what it does?
Gemstone Caverns is a legendary land from Time Spiral that is essentially... It's created as a combo card. That it was in the early versions of Hulk Flash before they banned Flash from Legacy, which was at the first... I believe the first Legacy Grand Prix.
As soon as possible, yeah.
it's a card that it states... If it's in your opening hand and you are not on the play, you may remove a different card from your hand and put it into play with a luck counter on it. The luck counter makes it so that it can tap for any color. It basically just allows you to remove a card in your hand from the game, put a land into play on your opponent's turn, so have a City of Brass for no life loss on turn zero. And because you're removing a card from your hand but you're on the draw... You're both starting with 7 cards, basically, but you have a land in play.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to land a turn 1 Chalice, it's just a nice second option to Simeon Spirit Guide to be able to play a Chalice on your first turn.
That can also, you know, function in a deck. It's a little bit better in the deck consistency-wise.
Absolutely.
Because you don't have to do that. You can just play it as a colorless producing mana. And since your deck is artifacts and you don't need that much blue mana, it can actually be okay since you're not playing red or other colors. It makes it a little easier to run with colorless lands.
It's also for the same reason that Spirit Guide, while Spirit Guide was in the initial list, we may take it out, was in there to be able to power out a turn one Chalice. Well, imagine you're on the draw. You put your Gemstone Caverns into play. Turn one, essentially, for you. You are able to play an Ethereum Sculptor. That means that on turn two, you can play Architect and Batterskull.
Right.
On the draw, turn two, Batterskull. Pretty darn good.
Right.
I mean, it seems like a worthwhile plan considering you're only playing two of them.
Right. And so beyond that, you know, one of the interesting things about the deck is because it's monocolor, you have a little bit more freedom to play with some colorless spell lands. So, you know, this deck, currently we have a list with, you know, 3 Tectonic Edge, which you maybe can go to the fourth. We also are playing Fairy Conclave because a man land is good
always.
And
it's,
you know,
a blue creature that gets pumped.
The other side of that is like, there are very few one drops in the deck, and so playing a land tapped on turn one is not that that damaging if you're curving out.
There are no one drops in the deck.
Yeah. Well, I mean, theoretically, we're talking about playing Chalice on turn one. Turn one plays, not one drops.
Sorry. Okay, yeah. Sure.
So yeah, this is kind of where the deck stands. You know, the sideboard plan can, you know, there are a ton of artifact hate cards: Grafdigger's Cage, Pithing Needle, Relic of Progenitus, Spellskite, Torpid Orb, you know, even Crucible Worlds or Snaring Bridge. These are all artifact cards that Tezzeret can cheat into play, or you can even consider just playing anyways because you can cheat them into play yourself with your many artifact mana-producing Birds of Paradise that you're playing in the deck.
Oblivion Stone's probably another card you'd want to have one of in
the sideboard. Oblivion Stone. So let's kind of get into the gauntlet and then move on. So the first off, as we mentioned, Delver. Blue-red Delver is the big bad of the format right now. It's, you know, format warping to the extent that it's probably the best deck by a pretty wide margin. This deck was built to kind of fight Delver. It has life gain to mitigate the fact that they can burn you out. It has Chalice of the Void, which is really the original point of the whole deck, where it lets you attack Delver in a way that it's very, very bad at fighting. Like, if you play that, the only two cards in their deck the three cards that you really then have to worry about are counterspells. Pyromancer, Pyromaster, Pyromancer.
Young Pyromancer?
Yeah. Young Pyromancer and Treasure Cruise are the only cards they really can cast in their deck. Everything else is a one drop. And, you know, Treasure Cruise is terrible at that point, because who cares? A 2/1 that only, like, three spells in their deck are castable, when you're killing so many cards in their hand, it becomes much worse as a card.
And that deck is so bad at dealing with Wyrmcoil Engines and Batterskulls that if you can land one, if you can land one, their 2/1 or any of their 1/1 tokens do nothing, because you're gaining 6 or 4 life every time they attack into it.
Well, I mean, if you're playing with Batterskull, you're getting 6 a turn and they can't do anything about that 6/6. And if you're playing with Batterskull, you're getting 8 a turn because they can't, or they're not attacking you.
Yeah. Like, it definitely feels, if the deck was to function correctly, I mean, that's the big question, is we need to sleeve the thing up and test it against all these matchups extensively to really be able to guarantee that this is the case. But if, in theory, it was to function in the way we intend it to, Delver would be one of your best matchups.
Right.
It just would be very hard to imagine a Delver deck winning through this.
Right. My fear, the fears I have, are counter magic is still viable against you.
Yep.
And, you know, Batterskull and Wyrmcoil Engine aren't the best cards against counter spells. Mind you, the fact that you're cheating it out on possibly turn four, if you're getting a Batterskull in, or not even a Batterskull, a Wyrmcoil Engine, you can keep mana on tap to fight Mana Leak. And so you're really worrying about Remand, which is problematic, but you also, like, are still able to pump a lot of creatures in the play very easily versus their game plan, which takes, you know, they're taking a turn out to kind of stop what you're doing.
Defense Grid is probably another card that comes to mind in the sideboard if you go against a blue deck.
Is Defense Grid an artifact?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And that's interesting.
So cards that I think you do bring in, I think there is some hate you can bring in against Delver, even though it's a strong matchup, you want to be stronger.
Right.
Defense Grid, which makes it so that their counter magic is much worse.
Yep.
Which you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Stealing your idea. Gonna edit it out. Spellskite, I think, is just in general a strong card that's going to be very good against many matchups.
That's a card that I've on multiple occasions tried to justify playing as a main deck card.
Birthing Pod has played at one Spellskite main forever. Because, I mean, like, it is a strong card. I think that you could probably maybe even convince yourself to play a few Swan Songs. I think you keep that in the side because there are decks like Splinter Twin that are going to be much harder of a matchup that it's very important for. And maybe Engineered Explosives because of the tokens that you might be needing to deal with, but I don't know how strong that would be. But it's a possibility.
Yeah, definitely a possibility. I think your better bet is to come up with a plan that is, you're so flexible because you're mono blue that your mana base is kind of up in the air as far as how you want to build this.
Right.
So there's any number of secondary colors you could go into for support.
Right.
Whether it's red and you play some number of Blood Moons and Volcanic Fallouts. Fallout seems very, very, very good against Delver.
I think Fallout's a little hard just because of the double red, but yes. Yeah.
But again, I mean, it doesn't seem difficult really at the end of the day.
More to the point is, I think with Delver, the sideboard options, the deck is built to beat Delver. The main deck should be every deck right now is main deck should be able to handle Delver, or you're not playing correctly.
Well, that's what the point of this deck is.
Yeah, that's where we started.
So if you move on to a deck that functions pretty differently, I'd say Scapeshift, which would be another one of the sort of baddies of the format.
Right, where Scapeshift got better. It's unsure right now if it's how its Delver matchup is, so that might make it weaker just because it's a little slower than Delver is.
Right.
But it still can just straight out kill people, and Delver itself can straight kill. And it got Dig Through Time, so it is a stronger deck than it was before, and
definitely,
it was already pretty strong. This deck, I think, is, you know, your A game plan against them is the game life. It's to just try and get a Batterskull or a Wyrmcoil Engine in there, because every three life you gain is another turn you're buying yourself.
And Chalice is bad, right, against them? Because they don't.
Yeah. Chalice is a card I would take out.
Do they... What are their most... Okay, Cryptic Command's a big spell for them. Remand's a big spell for them. Scapeshift itself is a big spell for them.
So Scapeshift, Remand... The counter magic keeps you done. Dig Through Time is really good for them. Like, the one thing that Chalice does hurt out is... the one drop they have in the deck is Serum Visions. It's not that big of a deal. Most of the ramp spells aren't even on consistent mana cost. So, it's really hard to hit out with a Chalice. I don't think Chalice is the card you really have against them.
Except that... How slow is Scapeshift? A turn 4 deck?
It's a turn... It can do turn 4. It's more consistent turn 5.
It's a turn 5 deck?
Yeah.
it's hilarious to think that this deck is so explosive, you could play a Chalice on four.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, like, I would save Chalices for four straight up, because it stops both Cryptic Command and
Scapeshift,
which are the biggest problems you probably have against
this deck. Which point, the only card in your deck that is unplayable becomes, you can't play Metamorphs and you can't play Master of Waves. But if you're shutting down Scapeshift,
who cares? Yeah,
who cares? Just, yeah.
I'd rather, if I can make it so Scapeshift can't kill me, I'll, because, like, the other thing is, the only thing they have the answer, 8 Chalice, is Cryptic Command.
Well, that's the hilarious thing, is that if you're on the play and you curve Architect into Master of Waves, you can actually play a Chalice for 8 mana turn.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Right.
Yeah, so that's sort of just a glimpse into, like, quite how insane the mana production out of this deck could be. They'll have 3 lands on the table, and if they don't have a counterspell, you just play Chalice for 4 mana.
On turn 3, on turn for 4.
And they're done.
Okay. Turn 4. It's a turn 4 Chalice for 4.
Yeah, but I'm saying if you're on the play, they've got 3 mana. Well, no, they've probably tri-belded.
So, yeah. I mean, you can get it down there, and if they tap out, or they, like, because, like, the other side is they might not be, right now especially, because this is a brew, they might not be expecting Chalice to come down.
I'm sure they won't be.
So they're like, they're going to tap out, because, like, they're like, oh, whatever, what are they going to do? I'm going to win. It doesn't matter. I can Scapeshift them to death.
Yeah.
So you have a little bit more versatility. The next cards that, you know, are a consideration of the sideboard, Blood Moon is good against them.
Yep.
You know, as I mentioned earlier, Swansong is probably a strong card in this matchup.
Big time, yeah.
Something that we didn't mention that is good for the Scapeshift matchup is you're running multiple Tectonic Edges.
Yeah.
And that Tectonic Edge, the reason you're playing Tectonic Edge is more this deck than any other one. Manlands are an issue as well, but this is very specifically a card that helps you in that matchup.
I would say also in this, Defense Grid's a big one for you.
Defense Grid is great here. I think also this is the deck that, you know, Crucible Worlds, if you were going to play it, this is the deck you bring it in against.
Yeah.
Because it lets you cycle those Tectonic Edges, making them basically just unable to get past 3 mana. So, you know, your deck is already kind of has some things against Scapeshift because you need to, you know, it can play those lands, and it also has the game plan of a few good sideboard cards to bring in. Defense Grid, Swan Song, Crucible Worlds. You know, these are cards that are pretty decent in the matchup.
Hmm.
All right. So next I want to talk about Affinity. Something to keep in mind here, that Chalice, this is another deck that Chalice coming down on one is not as strong, but Chalice on two or Chalice on zero are both very strong effects.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. It's difficult for you to play a Chalice on two with this list the way it's constructed. You have so many cards in the deck that you really do want to be playing on turn two. When you can't even cast your Sculptors in the game, it's not strong enough.
Well, what I'm saying is not necessarily playing on turn two, but have X be two.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's difficult. It's just a little bit more difficult to play it.
You can accomplish it on turn three.
But no. What I'm saying is that deck's so fast that unless
so
zero, I can understand, because if zero, they can't play a Mox Opal. Zero, they can't play a Memnite. They can't play an Ornithopter. They can't play what else costs zero?
Memnite, Ornithopter, and Mox. Those are the three important cards that you shut down.
It slows them down enough that if you could play it on zero, it's very likely you'll be able to get a life gainer in time to survive the matchup.
Right. Because, you know, that's the other point. Batterskull, the thing that is important to remember is Batterskull and Wurmcoal Engine, if you get them in the play in any conveniently timed manner, are just so much better than almost any card that could be in play. It just, they're mitigated by the fact that they cost a lot of mana. So that's why this deck is trying to pump them out.
Absolutely.
And Affinity is another matchup where if I start getting life on turn three with Batterskull, there's not a, like, they can still kill you because they can still outright get you with poison or
dispatch.
Not even just like poison and just like 4 life isn't that much against Skull Clamp.
Yeah,
it really isn't. They're going to hit you for chunks of 10 in the air, and your Batterskull is not going to do very much.
Cranial Plating, you mean?
I 100% meant Cranial Plating. What did I say?
Yeah, Skull Clamp.
Oh, Skull Clamp. I'm 100%.
If only Skull Clamp were legal.
Skull Clamp would. I think Treasure Cruise is bad.
Have we thought about playing Skull Clamp in this deck? Against Affinity, like, definitely your sideboard plan against Affinity is fine. I think that Shackles is a pretty strong card against them.
Oh, yeah. And that's in the main deck. So Shackles is good against them. It kind of, you know, you can steal their artifact creatures and then use them. It's also great against cards like Ravager, where you can sack the Ravager to itself. So you, like, it's basically a full-on removal spell. And you can put those counters on one of your artifact creatures, making it even better.
And when they, absolutely. And when they try to sack Ravager, it gives you the defense of them trying to shift the modular onto a creature, which is a targetable ability.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with Spellskite being able to redirect the modular ability.
Right.
You can just steal the creature in response, and I believe you still get the...
You get the creature. Yeah, that's where you... The thing you have to be wary of is trying to steal Ravager. They can put enough counters on it to make it so you don't get to steal it with Vidalkin Shackles.
But just one of those who bites first thing.
Right. The other thing to keep in mind here is that Vidalkin Shackles is also a card that can steal the... Etch Champion.
Yes, that's
is,
huge. You know,
that's a huge problem with a lot of decks. Like, that's one of, like, Affinity's best cards right now is that, because, like, it's also a Lightning Bolt resilient threat.
Yeah.
And this is a way, like, Vidalkin Shackles is just blatantly a removal spell for that card.
Big time.
Out of the sideboard, I think this is a format where, you know, Ensnaring Bridge might be pretty good in this matchup.
Could be, yeah. Because
you empty your hand so quickly that Ensnaring Bridge, which makes it so that it's a 3-drop artifact that opponents can't attack you with creatures that power is larger than the amount of cards that are in your hand.
Yeah.
So Ensnaring Bridge can very easily just lock Affinity out from really doing much damage to you if you can get your hand out of the way. This is another deck that Spellskite is good against.
It's good against everything.
Pithing Needle is another card to consider for this matchup because Pithing Needle, you know, locks out both either Ravager and or... not Skull Clamp.
You're looking for... Oh, Cranial Plating?
Right, it locks out, Cranial Plating and Ravager.
Yeah.
And
Steel Overseer.
And Steel Overseer. Though I think Steel Overseer of those cards is the one you have to worry about the least.
Yeah, and I mean, it doesn't lock all out because you have to choose one.
Yeah, you just choose one, but I think those other two are much more worrisome.
Which Revoker becomes another option there as well. Just 'cause it's
true.
Power, it's pumpable, you can turn it blue.
But the only reason I haven't, I don't think Revoker would be as good as Pithing Needle in this format right now is if you do not stop the Lightning Bolt plan,
yeah,
Pithing Needle is stronger.
Yeah.
And to be totally honest, it might just be stronger in general because Chalice is a card that might not be good in matchups that you put Pithing Needle in for.
Yeah, so obviously Pithing Needle comes in for Chalice.
Yeah. Your one-drop artifacts do in general, I would assume. The issue here is, does Affinity race you?
And the answer is probably yes. I mean, your game one against Affinity is pretty bad. You're really not. Your bananas draw is like a batter skull on turn three, which if you're on the draw, their board is already set up enough by turn three that by the time they probably have a way to remove it. Like, it seems really, really difficult. You would have to have a really strong set.
I also think this is a race. I think this is, like, you're playing Master of Waves and other cards that kind of just beat into their face quicker than they're beating into you. And I think it's a race that you're not really favored to win. But
that's fair.
I think you can race them. I think your nut-nut draws, like, your draws with Master of Waves could be wide enough and powerful enough to kind of make it a race versus just you straight up losing.
Yeah, I would agree. And obviously...
I think Vidalkin Shackles is a hue in this format. Tectonic Edge is really helpful because you kill their man lands, which are, you know, some of the problems you'll have with this deck threat wise. So I think there is a game. I think it's a difficult one.
Yeah.
And last but not least, Splinter Twin. So Splinter Twin is probably the other one that's a tough matchup. I think this is the main reason you're playing stuff like Swan Song and the artifact we mentioned a few times that you brought up.
Defense Grid. Definitely, yeah. I mean, there's no question your game one against Splinter Twin is pretty much awful. Your best bet is that you're going to get out... If you can get down Chalice for one, and you can get it down on turn one, it shuts down their consistency of their draw spells,
right?
Which is strong.
The cards that are good are Chalice, I think. Vidalkin Shackles is very strong. And I think that, like... You just have to go for it. I think you have to race them. I think there's another deck that, like, you can probably kill them. If they stumble, if they don't have the combo in hand, then you just have... Like, if they're a tempo version of the deck, then you can maybe go into them and beat into their game plan. I do think it's hard. I think sideboard-wise, you get access to cards like Torpor Orb, Swan Song, Defense Grid, Spellskite. These are all cards that are very good against them.
Do they play in the main deck ways to bounce your threats? I know. Out of the sideboard, they'll bring in things like Echoing Truth.
No, I don't think much in the main deck.
So if you're
good. though, Batterskull and Wormcoil Engine are not good against the tap abilities of Deceiver Exarch and Pestermite.
True, and also the deck functions all at instant speed, so you're really not going to be able to resolve a Chalice for three. You're not going to play.
No.
Chalice for six mana.
You will be able to. This is another matchup that I think Master of the Waves is like their game B plan to Master, or game C plan to Master Waves is where you really get helped out.
So yeah, it's interesting. I guess who goes first in this matchup seems pretty relevant. And I suppose if you go first, you can land a Chalice on one, and then you can just curve it in to beat your face in. Maybe you can go faster, and they're not going to be able to draw the cards they need because they don't have their cantrips. And they play four Lightning Bolt in the main deck as well.
Right.
So you shut off their ability.
You are turning cards off. And they have Peak and Serum Vision. Not Peak.
Cataxian Probe?
Yeah. Sleight of Hand. They have Sleight of Hand. And so like there's ways to kind of disrupt them with Chalice. Chalice on one is still decent against them.
Yeah.
Because they are very much similar to a Delver deck. They're a combo Delver deck versus just a tempo deck.
Yeah, your sideboard plan against them is pretty good.
Yeah.
You definitely have access to most of the cards
that are good against them.
Yeah, and definitely, yeah, just having counter magic and et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's probably the toughest. That's the toughest game one and the easiest game two.
All right, so that kind of covers the gauntlet. You know, the thing to remember about brewing in general is to make sure you know, the one lesson we kind of want to press is be creative. Like, you know, a lot of times there's a lot of haters out there in the world, and they kind of, you know, they'll discourage you. They'll say, well, you should just play a good deck, like a deck that's on the internet, whatever, and which is fine. And, you know, we're in an era where it's no longer like a faux pas to net deck. But, you know, if you want to brew, feel free doing so. And the key is testing.
And something I'll add really quickly, because there's a couple different kinds of brewers. Some of us like to just use good cards and just slap. They'll call it a brew, but it's using a bunch of cards that see tons of play anyway. It's like, I just built this new list, but it plays all cards that are format staples anyway. It's a brew, but it's not a super, super creative out-of-the-box brew, because at the end of the day, you're not using cards that no one plays. If you're going to try to use cards that no one plays, something very important to remember is this. Most of the time, you're counting on drawing two different cards in your opening hand for the deck to be super, super good. And if you look at a deck like Splinter Twin that has eight copies of each of the combo pieces, and it's a two-card combo, most of the time when you draw an opening hand, even with that list, you will not get both combo pieces in the opener. So if you're going to be creative in this way and try to build a deck like this Architect deck...
Consistency
is everything. And you have to remember that most of the time, if you have four copies of two different cards and the whole crux of the deck relies on that, you won't draw them in the opening hand.
Right. And you know, on that point, this deck... the one we talked about today, I don't think it was playable until recently. I think it now has that level of consistency of Mana Lords. I think it now has, you know, in a combination of Phyrexian Metamorph, Batterskull, and Wurmcoal Engine, it has the other side of that, which is very large threats that can do a lot of damage. And I think with Hall of Triumph and Master of Aetherium, it now has the redundancy of the Lord plan, so that
Master of Waves
is stronger.
When
I said Master of Aetherium, actually meant Architect, Grand Architect.
Yeah, so the end of the day, the bottom line is be creative, think outside the box, use cards that people think are bad, try to make them good, be creative, sleeve things up and test. Just remember, if it doesn't work, don't be afraid to kill it.
Right.
Build something else. Keep trying. Don't give up on brewing. It ultimately is the most satisfying thing in the world to take your brew to a tournament and win any number of games.
Even if
you don't win the tournament.
Though, on the other end, don't get discouraged if you bring it to... And this is why we say test. Don't get discouraged if you bring it to a tournament and then you just lose a bunch of games. Because the point is learning. You want to learn...
Absolutely.
The process of this is learning what cards are good, what cards are bad. Worst case scenario, you learn like, okay, these cards are unplayable for this reason, and if they print X card, this could be a deck that I can bring back, which is kind of what happened here.
And by the way, just in case anybody listening wants to add this, we never mentioned it even once, we're aware of the fact that Pili Pala goes infinite with Grand Architect and makes a million mana. I've tried to build the deck in Modern before. It's possible that we would even try to add it in as like a sideboard plan. It's just really, really hard to do.
Right. As we mentioned, you know, earlier, pet cards. Pili Pala is definitively a pet card, as wide as it goes. It and who knows? It might be powerful enough, but you know, we wanted to make this deck kind of take the most efficient, most consistent consistency is kind of what we are aiming for with what we are trying to accomplish with this plan.
100%.
You know, I want to remind everyone that you know the deck lists we've talked about today are in below on the rocketdub.com on the page. You know, make sure to check out our sister podcast, The Command Cast. Jimmy and Josh host, you know, a Commander show. They do a lot of cool things. We actually should be having each of them onto the show over the next couple of weeks, kind of to introduce to them and have them talk about it, as well as them kind of rehash. They've actually been on the show before. Remember that Rocket Jump currently is releasing VGHS, the most awesomest web series out there. It's like Harry Potter meets video games.
Awesome. And who doesn't love Harry Potter and video games?
As always, we have a question of the week. We want to kind of know what deck you guys are brewing. If you can tweet it at us, our Twitters are at Ben_Bateman and at Kess Wiley. You can put it in the comments below on rocketjump.com. And lastly, we kind of want to thank you guys for listening. We want to thank Ben for now joining us as part of Masters of Modern.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. This was a lot of fun. I would love to keep talking to you about Grand Architect every week.
Well, you know, not every week is going to be all the brewtasticness. Next week, we'll kind of get back to the similar schedule. Awesome. You know, we'll see you guys next week.
Take care.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.